Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Todd Bensman, the Center for Immigration Studies National Security Fellow, about, the unbelievable situation on our southern border. Then we're going to enjoy the Marine B&B, Skip and Gil, discussing the border and books. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce the National Security Fellow from the Center for Immigration Studies, Todd Bensman. Most of us are quite aware of the thousands and thousands of illegals that have come across and are coming across into our nation. Most of us don't know about another struggle that's going on, the struggle between the state of Texas and the U.S. government. So welcome to the show, Todd. Glad you could join us.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Todd, take a minute and tell us about the Center for Immigration Studies. Who are they, what they do, and then your role there?
Sure. The Center for Immigration Studies is a Washington, D.C.-based policy institute, otherwise known as a think tank, that has a motto of pro-immigrant, low-immigration. The center, it's a 501c3, has been in existence for more than 35 years, probably one of the longest and oldest, longest-running and oldest immigration policy think tanks in the country. I am a national security fellow for the center, not based in D.C. I'm based in Austin, Texas, not too far from the border, and I have worked for the center for almost 5 years now.
Okay. Now start by giving us a quick history of the current problem on our southern border. We've known the southern border has been, it's been crossed for probably centuries. But what we have now doesn't even come close to what was going on five years ago.
We're in historic numbers, historic territory. Every record on the books, on the government books, on anybody's books, is smashed many times over, starting on January 21st, 2021, literally on Inauguration Day. Whole series of policies. I could go into them if you asked me, but a whole series of Democratic policies, White House policies that went into effect on that day, literally enticed and allured and invited millions and millions of foreign nationals from around the world to cross the border because they were being allowed in. So, you know, when you let people in, they will come, as they say. So to date, we probably are pushing in excess of 4.5 million foreign nationals who have actually entered the country and are living inside the United States and cities across America, with probably on the order of 220,000 a month still crossing through even now, and will all the way, it looks like, to the end of the Biden first term. And, you know, if Democrats win the White House, you know, it'll just keep going like that. We probably will have somewhere on the order of, at this rate, 7 million or maybe more new immigrants in living inside the country from crossing the border by 2025.
You know, what are these people going to do? I understand that as a legal immigrant, it's against the law for anybody to hire them. Who feeds them, houses them, teaches them anything? And anybody who enters our country illegally, why would we think they would suddenly become legal, law-abiding citizens? How do you work this?
I mean, well, there's a wide gamut. I mean, what happens is typically you can hear complaints emanating from municipal governments, mayors, city councils across the country, declaring disasters, declaring emergencies, demanding federal bailouts. Probably the vast majority of those who are crossing the border go straight onto public welfare safety nets. Nobody's going to go living in the streets with families. We're not going to let people starve or go without medical attention. All of them are uninsured. Most will probably find work in the illegal employment labor market. Some are being given temporary work authorizations, all kinds of different ways. But the vast majority are, you know, on public welfare, and usually at the municipal level, but plenty on the federal level too, with cities demanding federal bailouts. Ultimately, I think this will be a big federal taxpayer bailout that'll just go on for years and years. And of course, you know, then you've got the U.S. healthcare system staggering under the weight of this, lots of debt numbers across the American healthcare system right now, coinciding with this. And then you've got school districts across America are just staggering under the weight of the children that are being brought in that were not planned for. So your school districts will be having bond elections. You should already be seeing that, purchasing portable classrooms and ESL teachers and all of those kind of growing pain problems.
This is horrendous. But beyond that, there's also another, can you call it war, going on our southern border, particularly in the state of Texas. That's something nobody's heard of. It.
Yeah.
I hadn't until recently.
So, you know, some of the Republican states, well, mainly one Republican state on the border, Texas, and Governor Greg Abbott have been spending very significant state resources to try to oppose these federal policies that are allowing everybody in who reaches the border by a wide variety of tactics and methods on the border. The most recent is an operation called Hold the Line, which has state troopers and National Guardsmen putting up razor wire and then physically blocking entrances at the river's edge. In other words, immigrants are not able to get up the riverbank and past the riverbank because the Texas troopers are kind of like NFL linemen who are just blocking, will not let people in. But the immigrants understand that if they can manage to get past the Texas blockade to a Border Patrol agent, that Border Patrol is under orders from Washington to be granted very quick entry into the United States under an authority called Notice to Appear. They're given papers that are kind of like a pinky handshake, you know, to voluntarily report to an ICE office in the city of their choice. And so many, many tens of thousands of immigrants are being granted these papers and then quick release into the interior, which of course is what's enticing them. And so you have Texas working to undermine Biden's Border Patrol and its policy, and you have Biden's Border Patrol working to undermine the state of Texas and blocking them at the river. And that's kind of the subject of my most recent reporting from the border. I go to the border all the time. I was just down there, I guess, the week before last and picked up all this reporting. And I have a video report of it up right now at CIS.org, Center for Immigration Studies website, about an 8-minute video that kind of shows you what's going on. I've also written this for the Daily Mail and the New York Post, what's going on. That is kind of what I call it, a cold border war. That thing is going to be extended. We're going to be seeing a lot of that over the next year and a half.
You know, this is just unbelievable. And frankly, I would be willing to bet that the majority of the federal immigration people agree with Texas, but they've got a job and they've got to obey their job or they'll lose their job.
Right. That's right. Those Border Patrol agents are, this is not their policy. This isn't something that they came up with. Just a couple of years ago, just before the Biden administration entered office and brought these catch and release policies, everybody gets in policies with them, the Border Patrol was catching immigrants and immediately returning them to Mexico under the Remain in Mexico policy, asylum, and or Title 42, the pandemic era pushback. So this is something relatively new for Border Patrol to, instead of pushing them all back, catching them, hunting them, finding them, pushing them back to Mexico, the immigrants are trying to their best to find them because they know it'll be like a Walmart greeting operation. Yeah.
There's more to discuss about our southern border, and Todd's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. The truth is, time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Todd and I will be right back.
GNS, a Korean-owned company operating in North America, will be supporting an effort to honor and respect the veterans who fought in the Korean War. This effort is done in conjunction with an organization called Project Soldier. Project Soldier is a nonprofit organization based in the US and Korea. Since 2013, it has been taking photographs and videos of Korean War veterans all over the world. GNS North America is honored to host Project Soldier August 6th to 15th in Michigan and Ontario. Project Soldier wants to interview and take photos of these veterans. They will then receive pictures and have their experience memorialized, which proudly tells of their sacrifice for freedom. If anyone knows any Korean War veterans nearby, please contact Joshua Roberts at jroberts@gnsauto.com. jroberts@gnsauto.com.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Todd Bensman, a National Security Fellow for the Center for Immigration Studies. Todd, I don't understand how America can afford to do this. I mean, we were already broke. I mean, inflation, printing money, and now we're doing this too. This has got to create a bigger crisis, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, certainly in the near term, this is costing, we don't really know. I mean, different organizations, mine, Center for Immigration Studies, we've all tried to put a price tag on this thing. Nobody really knows what it is because there are so many unseen expenditures that, especially by the federal government and DHS, for processing these immigrants into the country, flying them in, bringing the unaccompanied children, having to care for them, having to reunite them with family in the United States. I mean, the costs are hidden. There are FOIA requests in for these costs. There are huge contracts that are being let to nonprofit, non-governmental organizations to help the government manage this massive, incredibly massive inflow. It's in the hundreds of billions of dollars. That's all I can really tell you. I've seen a wide gamut of estimates, and that hurts. And it's going to be an ongoing, it's not a one-time expenditure. It's going to be an ongoing expenditure, unplanned, unfunded burden. You know, I've already mentioned about all these different cities that are demanding bailouts. They're all going to get those bailouts. FEMA is involved to the tune of something like $400 million, I think, just this year. The numbers are astronomical. The expenditures are astronomical. But then, you know, municipalities are going to have to pick up costs. School districts are going to have to pick up costs. It's going to be really hard in the end to figure out how bad this hurt us.
I quite agree. And it's going to be, I think you pointed this out, it's going to be long lasting. If we were to stop it all right now, bing, the long range cost and involvement is still in there for at least, I would guess, a decade or two. Am I right?
Yes. Listen, we haven't even talked about impacts on public safety and the criminal justice system. A lot of these folks are committing crimes that would not have been committed otherwise, going through the our investigative agencies and then our criminal justice system and our prison systems. Really, the impacts are really wide ranging, and victimizations of American citizens, and then there's labor market pressure. We have this massive flood of cheap labor putting downward pressure on wages in the service sectors and kind of the middle class in the United States. Really, this is transformative. I write in my book, Overrun. My book is Overrun, How Joe Biden Unleashed the Greatest Border Crisis in U.S. History. That book, dedicates, the final chapter to what I call forever consequences, which, just kind of touches the surface, really, of what these consequences are going to be. It's going to take us a few years to figure out what happened here and when we'll finally, if ever, be able to integrate this massive influx of humanity.
Yes, sir. And I take it that the other southern states, New Mexico, Arizona, California, are not doing what Texas is doing. Is that a safe statement?
Yeah. You know, immigration, illegal immigration, it used to be a fairly nonpartisan issue. Democrats prior to this would never have countenanced any kind of policies like this. These are really far, far fringe policies coming from the Democratic Party coalition. The states of Arizona, you know, Arizona is now run by a Democratic governor, so it's now very partisan. And they like this and want it and would never do anything to acknowledge that it might be a problem in the United States. So they downplay it and pretend it's not happening. Same with New Mexico and California. So those are all Democratic states, Democratic governors who really just participate in the influx, making sure to pull back their state police, to disconnect their state police and local police forces from any kind of cooperation or any kind of programs that might deter or defend the border or stop it, but instead to spend money to integrate immigrants, to provide resources. And of course, the immigrants, when they get these resources, immediately message back on their phones, hey, we're getting all the money here in California. They're giving us all the money in New York. They're keeping us in hotels, all expenses paid everywhere we go. Come here. And so they do. Right now, the hottest border zone in the United States isn't even in Texas. It's the Tucson sector in Arizona. They have figured out that Arizona is a very, very friendly state. Everybody gets in. Border Patrol is there to process them in within 24, 36 hours. So Tucson's sector is absolutely overflowing with humanity pouring over the border. And people are dying, too, to get there, to take advantage of these very rare policies. They're dying to get there, literally.
Yes, unfortunately, it's true. Todd, we're starting to run out of time. How can listeners learn more about the Center for Immigration Studies? How can they plug in or donate? It's a 501c3, you said. How can they do that?
Right. And I would encourage that because, you know, I spend a lot of time on the ground. I do boots on ground reporting from Panama all the way to Mexico and from Tijuana all the way down to Matamoros. I'm on that border all the time. The Center for Immigration Studies pays my tab, picks up my hotel bills, which are sometimes not, these are not fancy hotels at all in Mexico. I'm often with the immigrants. CIS.org, Center for Immigration Studies. We have an extreme wealth of information on our site. We have a lot of fantastic fellows, far beyond just my reporting and my papers and thinking. If you really want to find out what's actually happening with immigration, because the national media really has abrogated their journalistic duty on this one, you're really not going to find this in very many places. Most of the immigration-related think tanks are on the other side of this, so they're advocating for mass migration and for the elimination of all the immigration laws that are on the books or to ignore them. So we're a very rare bird, CIS.org.
Thank you. And you've got a book or two, Overrun, at least, on this topic. Tell us about each book and how people can buy a copy.
Right. So Overrun is my book encompassing the first 2 years of reporting on this mass migration Biden border crisis. It's available in bookstores, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you can go. Published by Post Hill Press, regular publisher, Overrun. You can't miss it. You can also get it on Amazon, and it's about to come out on audio. An audio book is going to come out on August 15th. It's available on Kindle. My first book, 2021, is called America's Covert Border War. And this is all about the threat of jihadist infiltration over that border. That is probably more relevant now than it was even when I first published 2 years ago, because we've had more than 240 immigrants apprehended on that border who are on the terrorist watch list. And if you want to understand how America processes those kind of people crossing the border and what that threat is, America's Covert Border War is the one, also by Post Hill Press, available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or anywhere books are sold.
Let me encourage you folks, we citizens, we have to do something. We have to know this stuff. We have to communicate with our elected officials, congressmen, and senators, and tell them to stop this stuff. Todd, thank you. Thank you for sharing this important information today, and thank you for your service to our nation. God bless you, brother.
Thank you very much. But really, you know, my work doesn't compute without people like you magnifying the reporting and the message. And so I thank you back.
Hey, I guess we're on the same team then.
That's right. We are.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Gil and Skip will share about our border and books, and then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom Troops. It's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. Now it's time for the Marine B&B, not bed and breakfast. Marine vet Gil Mazza will discuss what's going on our southern border, and Marine vet Skip Coriel, who is both a much-published author and a book publisher, will discuss an appropriate book for us to read. Okay, Gil, I'm delighted that you're on the Frontlines of Freedom team. Tell us about the border. Well, it's still a mess, right?
Oh, getting worse all the time, Denny. And greetings to both of you and Skip. First, I want to say that I agree with Todd Benzman's, and I really regret the fact that this catastrophic open border policies by this administration is causing such a wedge in between law enforcement agencies that have historically worked together ever since 1924 when the Border Patrol was established. But I wanted to talk to you about that CBP app that was put out. Remember when DHS CBP was taking a victory lap claiming that the app would reduce illegal entries by 70% after Title 42 and that eventually it would get rid of most of it? But get this, the smuggling cartels all around the world have co-opted CBP One for themselves and now are using it to register illegal aliens with either fraudulent asylum claims and others from countries that don't even qualify from asylum all around the world. They're using it to be able to register them in there. Remember that you have to be in proximity of the border to apply. So how are they doing it? Well, the cartels sell illegals a private VPN, not allowing the app to track where they are. After this, you can simply fly in from any place in the world and just show your scheduled appointment to CBP, right? So you ask, who would see this coming, right? Of course, certainly not the people responsible for the entire safety and security of the country, right?
Wow. This is...
Are you speechless?
Yes, and that's rare.
Well, let me add some icing on the cake here, right? So thanks to classic government ingenuity, right, which is right up there with military intelligence, the app is working terrible. It gets a 2.6 rating at the App Store. I'll tell you, you'll get a laugh reading the reviews, and somehow all in good English and very detailed, I might add. Who's rating this app? Well, the cartels, the NGOs or non-government organizations who stand to gain millions of taxpayer dollars, and of course, your open border advocates.
Well, I'm glad it's being of use to somebody. Unfortunately, right. Not good Americans.
No. Yeah. So, it maybe good old government incompetence could have stalled this illegal immigration crisis if it weren't for the fact that now illegal entry numbers are skyrocketing back to pre-Title 42 levels with no end in sight. Now, nothing really changed. We're seeing almost 300,000 people come in a month, either the ones that are allowed in to the CBP-1 through illegal entries, and even all the astronomical number of gotaways.
I can't even imagine where this is going to end up, but it isn't going to be good for anybody.
What I think is hilarious, though, is that now the Democrat-led cities, New York, you know, Los Angeles, San Francisco, are all crying foul, and they're saying, how can we handle this catastrophic border crisis? We need more money. Now, see, they don't want to stop it. They want more money. As opposed to 930 days of these border towns and border cities all across the southern border and now the northern border, who have seen record numbers come in, and their services, education, medicine, social services, welfare, food stamps, all that is catastrophically devastated.
Wow. And we could go on.
Yes.
But folks, you can talk to your congressmen and U.S. senators and state representatives and tell them you don't want to be part of this. We can get active. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Gil and Skip about the border and books. Skip, it's your turn. How many books have you written?
Oh, I have written 21 books, Colonel. About 15 of those are novels, apocalyptic adventure type, and then 6 other nonfiction books on, you know, the Bill of Rights, Second Amendment rights, things of that nature, personal security, self-defense, all of
any,
that.
Any
all,
coloring all books in stuff. There, Skip?
Actually, I have not done a single coloring book, although...
asking for a friend, you know.
Well, yeah, I could do a Special Ranger edition, but, you know, maybe. We'll see.
Make the pictures big, okay? So I don't have to worry too many colors.
Okay. Sounds good.
How am I supposed to handle this with these guys picking on me like this?
You are the only gentleman in the room. You're an officer and a gentleman. You have to maintain control.
Yes.
Wish me luck, folks. Okay, Skip, what's the book you've selected for us?
Well, the book, you know, this month, Colonel, is called The Fourth Turning, An American Prophecy, What the Cycles of History Tell Us About America's Next Rendezvous with Destiny. And this was published back in 1997, written by William Strauss and Neil Howe. And basically, the premise of this book is, and I found this, it was encouraging for me, because, you know, a lot of us baby boomers, you know, we grow up in a society, you know, that's pretty good. You know, things are under order. We know where we belong, things of that nature. But it just seems like in the last 50 years, America has gone to hell in a handbasket, you know, and the southern border is just one symptom of that. Mm. But this particular book basically gives an explanation for how did it get this way. And the encouraging thing is, according to Strauss and Howe, this has happened before, not once, but many times. Mm. You know, they go all the way back to before the American Revolution. And the premise of their book is that there are 4 turnings in every saeculum. And a saeculum is the way the ancients would define a long human life, basically 80 to 100 years long. And there are 4 turnings in each saeculum, each turning lasting 20 to 25 years. And to give you some context of this, because I know I'm throwing out a whole bunch of stuff here, each saeculum, you know, is basically 4 generations or 4 turnings. The first turning is kind of like springtime, right? And our latest first turning would have been the post-World War II generation, basically 1945 to 1965. People were, you know, caring and sentimental that, you know, we were coming off the high of, you know, winning, you know, the war against Nazi Germany and Japan. But then around 1965 to 1985, we had the second turning or the awakening, the 60s culture, right? People are very principled and very narcissistic in that particular turning. And that's the summer, right? Everything's great. It's rosy, but, you know, we're down on our country, right? And then the fall, that's the third turning, is the unraveling of that culture. It's where basically the baby boomers and the new generation is butting heads, right? and everything unravels. There's no more patriotism. Morality kind of goes to hell in a handbasket. It's like the narcissistic me generation, and they're tearing everything apart. And it's a culture war. And then the fourth turning is like the winter. That's where a crisis occurs because everything is unraveled. We don't have the old morality anymore, but we don't really have a new morality yet as well. Everything's in a state of flux, and people are fighting over what are we going to hand to the next generation. And according to Powell and Strauss, this happened in 2008 with the Great Recession, is what they're calling it. And they've since done a new book, or actually Neil Howe has, because William Strauss has since died, called The Fourth Turning Is Here. And they're saying that the fourth turning, or the, you know, the Great Crisis, began roughly in 2008 and will finish roughly in the year 2030. But it was encouraging to me because it helped me, it put holes in my bowling ball. It's like, okay, why is this happening? Why is everything all screwed up? I was able to read this, and using generational theory, it gave me something to grab onto. You know, when you're understanding why things are going on that are happening, it's helpful. So I would recommend this book to anyone who is confused about why is our society going to hell in a handbasket. It was helpful for me, and I think it'll be helpful for our readers, our listeners as well, Colonel.
Name the book again and the author.
The Fourth Turning, An American Prophecy, What the Cycles of History Tell Us About America's Next Rendezvous with Destiny. And the authors are William Strauss and Neil Howe.
Thank you, bro. Can I submit a fifth seculum, and that's what you go and get adjusted at a chiropractor?
Yeah, you can.
I tell you what, this is a big interest to me because I am a student of the scriptures, but I'm a particular student of Revelation. And to see the cycles throughout history and try to understand, is what going on right now the end times that so many people think that it is, or is it just another cycle in history we got to go through until the final return of Christ at the end of history? Good stuff.
Stay tuned. Gil, thank you for your insights and being a part of the Frontlines of Freedom team.
You're welcome, Danny. Thank you so much for having me on. And Skip, keep on writing. I'm looking forward to it.
And thanks for your comments, Skip. Now get to work. You're back on in a couple of minutes. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues Concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Please do send your thoughts to me at danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Air Force vet Carl said he knows that we try not to get political. But what's with this latest nonsense bunch of charges against President Trump for exercising free speech?
Carl, it's very clear that our federal law enforcement and judicial systems are corrupt. We need to all be very active in the next election.
And Karen, a Coast Guard mom, really appreciated the great coverage on the Coast Guard. Thank you.
Karen, it was our pleasure. And now it's time for military history. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 15 August, 1845, the U.S. Naval Academy was established at Annapolis, Maryland, on former site of Fort Severn.
And that brings to mind my favorite saying of beat Navy.
Okay. Okay, Colonel.
And on the 15th of August, 1863, during the Civil War, the Confederate submarine H.L. Huntley arrived at Charleston on two covered railroad flat cars. Brigadier General Jordan advised Mr. B.A. Whitley that a reward of $100,000 would be paid by John Fraser and Company for the destruction of the USS New Ironsides. He added that a similar sum for the destruction of the wooden frigate Wabash and the sum of $50,000 for every monitor sunk was also being offered. The next day, Jordan offered that every assistance should be rendered in equipping the submarine with torpedoes. Jordan noted that General Beauregard regarded the H.F. Huntley the most formidable engine of war for the defense of Charleston now at his disposal, and accordingly is anxious to have it ready for service. Well, it didn't work.
Yeah. Oh, details. And on 17 August 1943, during World War II, General George Patton and his 7th Army arrived in Messina several hours before British Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery and his 8th Army, winning the unofficial race to Messina and completing the Allied conquest of Sicily. After we entered World War II, Patton played a key role in the Allied invasion of French North Africa in 1942. In 1943, he led our 7th Army in its assault on Sicily and won fame for beating the British to Messina. Although Patton was one of the ablest American commanders in World War II, he was also one of the most controversial. He presented himself as a modern-day cavalryman, designed his own uniform, and made eccentric claims of his direct descent from great military leaders of the past. On December 21, 1945, he died in a hospital in Germany from injuries sustained in an automobile accident.
And on the 14th of August, 1945, the American War Production Board removed all restrictions on the production of automobiles in the U.S., and gas rationing also ended. And General Douglas MacArthur was appointed the Supreme Allied Commander to accept the Japanese surrender. An immediate suspension of hostilities was ordered, and Japan was ordered to end all fighting by its forces on all fronts immediately.
That's a pretty good day, Colonel.
Not a bad one.
That same day, Japanese Emperor Hirohito stated that the war should end. He recorded a radio message to the Japanese people saying that they must bear the unbearable. During the night, a group of army officers led over 1,000 troops in an attempt to steal the recording, but failed to overcome the guards at the Imperial Palace. The Japanese decision to surrender was transmitted to the Allies. The next day, August 15, the recorded message of Emperor Hirohito was broadcast to the Japanese people. Many could not at first accept what had happened. The tight control of the government had prevented civilians from knowing the full extent of the weakness of Japan's position. This is VJ Day, victory over Japan. Since Germany had surrendered in May, World War II was now over.
And on the 16th of August, 1945, Lieutenant General Jonathan Wainwright, captured by the Japanese on the island of Corregidor in the Philippines, was freed by Russian forces from a POW camp in Manchuria, China. When President Roosevelt transferred General MacArthur from the Philippines to Australia in March of 1942, General Wainwright was promoted to Lieutenant General and given command of all the Philippine forces. When Bataan was taken by the Japanese and the infamous Bataan Death March of captured allies was underway, Corregidor became the next battleground. Wainwright and his 13,000 troops held out for a month despite heavy artillery fire. Finally, Wainwright and his troops, already exhausted, surrendered on May 6th. Wainwright spent the next 3.5 years as a POW. The man who had been nicknamed Skinny was now emaciated. His hair had turned white and his skin was cracked and fragile. He was also depressed, believing he would be blamed for the loss of the Philippines. Wainwright was given a hero's welcome, promoted to full general, and awarded the Medal of Honor.
On 15 August 1950, during the Korean War, the Korean augmentation to the U.S. Army program was born when General MacArthur ordered 8th Army to increase the strength of each American company and battery with 100 Korean recruits. The Katusas program, as they came to be called, were legally part of the ROK Army, but would serve as part of American units. While largely untrained, the Katusas were a badly needed infusion of manpower to the depleted 8th Army ground units.
And on the 15th of August, 1961, 2 days after sealing off the free passage between East and West Berlin with barbed wire, East German authorities began building the Berlin Wall. to permanently close off to the west. For the next 28 years, the heavily fortified Berlin Wall stood as the most tangible symbol of the Cold War, a literal Iron Curtain dividing Europe. The end of World War II in 1945 saw Germany divided into four Allied occupation zones. Berlin, the German capital, was likewise divided into four occupation zones, even though it was located deep within the Soviet zone. The future of Germany and Berlin was a major sticking point in post-war treaty talks, and tensions grew when the U.S., Britain, and France moved in 1948 to unite their occupation zones into a single autonomous entity, the Federal Republic of Germany, West Germany. In response, the USSR launched a land blockade of West Berlin in an effort to force the West to abandon the city. However, a massive airlift by Britain and the U.S. kept West Berlin supplied with food and fuel, and in May 1949, the Soviets ended the defeated blockade. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, at 5:45 p.m. in Tulsa, Oklahoma, officers responded to multiple calls about an elderly woman. Upon arrival, they found a 71-year-old woman with severe facial, head, and body injuries. Police said there were shoe tread prints on her face, and she was unable to speak. Several witnesses attempted to render aid to the woman, police said, adding that witnesses saw a male punching, kicking, and stomping on the woman. The suspect was caught and said he beat the woman because she said something wrong to him that he didn't like. The victim was taken to a hospital and was expected to be okay. The criminal was arrested on charges of aggravated assault and battery on an elderly person.
Thanks, Colonel. I don't like reporting and commenting on stories like this, but the ugly truth is that I have to simply because it's becoming so prevalent in our society. It's almost like there's a war against the elderly. Older people are seen as victims, as scapegoats, and as easy targets for anyone with a grudge or anger or too much testosterone. Have you noticed that the victim in today's story wasn't a 6'6" tall, 300-pound bodybuilder? Of course not. It was a little old lady who couldn't possibly defend herself. Now, rather than preach about our society's downward spiral into graft and corruption, let's skip that part and just tell you what older people can do to protect themselves against attacks of this nature. First and foremost, I hate to preach, but you need to arm yourself with a good quality pistol and need to carry it every time you go out in public. The gun I recommend for a 30-year-old man isn't the same gun I'd recommend for a 71-year-old woman. People in their golden years have weaker hands and arms, so you won't want a gun that's difficult to operate. Get yourself a tried and true 5-shot self-defense revolver. It will never jam, and you have 5 rounds to stop the aggressor. As for caliber, well, that depends on how much recoil you can handle. All of you will be able to handle a .22 long rifle or .22 Magnum. Just make sure you have enough hand strength to press the trigger before you buy it. You can test this by dry firing the gun. A .38 special round will do a lot more damage, but you'll want to shoot it first to make sure you're comfortable with the huge amount of recoil that it has. Some say that a .22 caliber is on the light side for self-defense, and I agree with them. However, you have to work with reality, so just shoot the round that's going to work best for you. It doesn't matter what your husband or your son shoots. Choose a caliber you're comfortable with, that you enjoy shooting, and that you're willing to carry every day. Trust me, when you point the gun at them and start shooting, they won't take the time to ask you what caliber it is. Second, modify your lifestyle. Don't go out after dark. Travel with friends when you can. Start paying attention to what's going on around you. And don't frequent high-risk areas. All these things can help deter an attack as well as drive it away. If this Tulsa woman had been armed, she would have had a fighting chance instead of being just another victim. Front Lines of Freedom encourages her and wishes her all the best as she recovers from her injuries.
Our movie of the month is The Silent Child. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd really appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at Denny at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, General Arnold Panero will discuss the challenges facing our nation. Then Chad Stewart will discuss some books for children that fit into helping our next generation of warriors. Will Hubbard will discuss the veterans' education and successes. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.